Welcome to The Art of Discernment, a podcast where professors from across the Master's University discuss current events and higher education from a biblical worldview.
Hello and welcome back to The Art of Discernment. I am Dr. Bob Dixon, and today we are joined by Dr. Mitch Hopewell. And Dr. Hopewell, welcome. It's good to have you.
Thank you.
A little bit about Dr. Hopewell. He is the provost of the Master's University. If you're wondering what provost means, he's my boss. He is the executive that shepherds the academics here on this campus. So there's a lot to that. In case you wondered what provost meant, there it is. He is also, if that wasn't enough, the dean of our online learning program. And program by program, I mean programs. There's a lot there. Your pedigree is a lot of fun to talk about as well. You have a bachelor's degree from the Master's University. So we're proud to call you an alum of our institution. You have also attended Northern Arizona University, where you got a master's degree in education, in educational technology specifically, and also a doctor of education in curriculum and instruction. Did I get all that right, Mitch?
Very good. Thank you.
Well, again, welcome to the podcast. And specifically, the reason that we brought you in, there's a lot of things that we could talk about with you, but specifically, we're going to talk about the trend that's playing out in colleges and universities across the country, and really for more than a decade. And that's this movement by many to view higher education as a commodity to be acquired versus a lot of other things that it has been considered over the past. So
that's true.
And I know you have a lot to say about this, so yeah. Let me just jump right in with the first question.
Okay.
What does someone mean when they say higher education is a commodity in this country? Yeah. What does that mean?
Well, a commodity is something, a good that can be bought, sold, traded, and acquired. And one of the concerns that I see in higher education is the commodification of education. And that's a fancy way of basically saying that rather than going through the experience of a university program, rather than spending the time to learn and grow intellectually, students have become focused on acquiring credits to get the stamp or the diploma as the end goal. Certainly, a diploma is an important thing. We know from statistics that students who earn a college degree have better lifelong earning potential overall. But what's happened is that has become the end goal versus the process of learning, growing, maturing. This has developed over probably the last 2 to 3 decades. It's been a trend that is not, I wouldn't call it a malicious trend. Mm-hmm. I would say that what's happened is as many adults have gone back into an educational experience to finish their degree, there has been a move towards efficiency to get that done. As an adult, they want to finish their education, they want to complete that, but then efficiencies take over. Right. And so now you see what's been growing again over the last maybe 10 or 15 years is work for credit. So schools are starting to evaluate people's prior experience and then granting credit based on that. There's another similar thing that we call competency-based education, mm-hmm. Which is, this is not a complete and total definition of that, but if students can essentially pass the test, demonstrate that they have learned a skill, then they would be granted credit. But what that does, it's efficient and it's helpful. It's economically beneficial to students. But what that does is it cuts out the time that is spent in the classroom, reading, writing papers. And as you know, as a faculty member, that is where much of the learning happens. When they marinate in the subject matter, it takes time for them to think about it. They have to respond. They get challenged mm-hmm. by their peers and by their faculty member on areas that may not come up if you're simply just demonstrating that I've acquired a skill. So now this then starts to move towards that commodity. If I can demonstrate that I already have it, you'll just give me the commodity. You'll give me the token. You'll give me the chip. Mm-hmm. And so it's something to be careful about. Not all adult learning programs. I don't want to give off the idea that adult learning programs are merely a new way for students to just simply get the commodity. There are a lot of programs, and we here at the Master's University online, we strive to have a quality educational experience tailored to the adult learner who is not on campus. But in any case, that is the main danger. And in society, as we look at a college degree as being the ticket, we tend to overlook the experience that comes with it.
Given this move toward the commoditization of higher education, I think right on the heels of that, you have this, and I'm going to put this in air quotes for, I know our listeners can't see it, but this movement toward free education. Mm. And so describe what that means and its implications in higher ed.
Absolutely. Well, as you know, nothing is free. Mm. There is no free lunch, as the economist would say. Someone pays for it. And so the logic goes that if education is important, if getting the degree is an important thing, then society should pay for it. Obviously, in America, we would pay for that through taxes of some kind. That's how our economy works. And so the logic would go that if it's so important that people graduate college and get that degree, then we should pay for more people to do it because that's a barrier, economic barrier. Okay. Well, there are lots of problems with that. And one of the problems that comes with that is that if the government is paying for the education, what the government pays for, the government controls. Mm-hmm. And higher education is not a set of repeatable, similar widgets that you could theoretically go to and collect anywhere. That would be more like a commodity. It's an experience. We have something that's called academic freedom, which is a completely different topic to talk about, but it acknowledges that every faculty member is going to approach their discipline in a slightly different way mm-hmm. and teach it with some freedom. And so when you start to have government control over the system, you're going to have to start to monitor that, create similarity in that. So you lose a lot through that. Furthermore, when something is free, completely and totally free, it's not valued in the same way as something that costs. And that's not to say that people who don't have the means financially to go to school don't deserve it. Never would I suggest that.
Right.
But the idea that the government is going to pay for something comes, it's more than just making everything free. And then everybody can collect that chip and walk away. That devalues education in a pretty significant way.
And what you said about control is really important because, you know, that's kind of, here's a check in one hand, here's a check in the other hand, here's my list of curricular mandates for you. And this is what you're going to teach. And that's problematic in any scenario on any campus, I would think, especially problematic here where we are preaching Christ and all that that entails. The government, we don't want involved in our preaching of the word and instilling that into our students. I think that becomes a dangerous proposition for us.
Absolutely. And I don't think that the master's university would ever go down that road. But as it relates to education becoming a commodity, it will impact us. So let me say it another way. Even if the government were to begin to pay for education and financially support or subsidize education, that's not a choice that the master's university would make right. to accept that, but it would impact us because in our marketplace, you would have a free product.
So in light of these changes that you just described, and not all of it's negative, but some of it is, mm-hmm. Dive into that a bit. Talk about what's changed and why maybe we're losing something.
Yeah. So, I mean, you go back many, many years and most often one family member from a family would go to college. It wasn't something that, you know, was every kid in a family went to, and it was a generally for, you know, for that student or that family member who was, you know, showed the most promise and, you know, didn't have a particular skill that they were implementing. And so they would go to college, they would spend more time thinking and learning. Well, and that goes back, you know, many years, decades. But what's happened is that where college was a choice for a student who wanted to extend their intellectual growth and grow educationally. What's happened is we've moved into an era probably somewhere around the 70s and into the 80s, which was probably fueled by a strong economic, mm-hmm. Scene that we've gone to the idea that everybody needs to go to college. And part of that has been the unwillingness of school counselors or teachers to tell a student that maybe they're not ready for college. It's become almost in parallel with the commodification of education, it's become something that's sort of a right. Like, I have to go to college. And even if maybe I'm not quite prepared for it or ready to go into it, it's something that I have to do. Mm. Everybody needs to go. Everybody's good enough. Everybody's smart enough. And we're unwilling to tell a student that maybe now is not the right time for you. And what happened through that is you had a lot of the trade schools and a lot of the trade started ending up finding that they had less and less people interested. So because we were telling every student they needed to go, we had less students entering the workforce, which is a noble thing to do. There's nothing wrong with a student graduating high school and moving into a trade, being a productive member of society. Mm-hmm. But we came to the point where that system was maybe a little bit abused in the past, and students were told that they were unable to go to college because of a family situation or whatever the case is. They were told, you can't go to college. You shouldn't go to college. Your family didn't go to college. And maybe that's too far on the other side of the spectrum. But like I said, we've moved into this era, you know, through the 90s and into the 2000s, where everybody goes to college. Everybody has to go to college. And then completing college then becomes the thing that has to happen. And so the standards come down because everybody has to finish. So you find the trades, you know, many people that I know personally, and you see this out in the literature, the trades are suffering because there are not enough people that are willing to be journeymen, apprentices, and get into it that way. And so then you have this bitterness, and this creates this sort of stigma against school. It didn't do me any good. It just created a lot of debt, and I got a degree that didn't matter to me. Well, is it the fault of higher education, or is it the fault of the student who wasn't ready to go, didn't know what major they wanted to go into, went into college because everyone told them they needed to, and then graduated with a degree that didn't have any relevance to them?
And on the college and university side, there's this thing that we call attrition rates, and we measure those things. That's, you know, how many students come here, graduate, and that's one of the metrics I know every university will use to measure effectiveness. So if you couple that with what you just described, that creates some pressure on the university to say, okay, they're here.
Absolutely.
Talk about that a bit.
Yeah. So one of the metrics that an accreditor will look at is graduation rate, persistence to graduation, and that becomes a really important motivating factor. Now, on the one hand, it's been helpful because it's helped colleges and universities spend more time focused on supporting students that do want to learn. On the negative side, you would have the idea that, you know, the goal is to get them through. And so then GPA standards might get lowered and students may bounce around to multiple majors trying to find a class that they can just pass. And so that would be sort of the negative outcome of that.
There are so many different answers to the question of why go to college, why go to university. So this is an interesting thing to explore. If you were to stop a student outside of this room and say, hey, why are you here? Mm-hmm. What would be your hoped for answer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, at the master's university, my hoped for answer would be that I wanted to come to a place that valued scripture, honored Christ in all things. And I was attracted to that because that's what I want the rest of my life to look like. And the master's university would be the best place to attend college, get an education that's centered around the absolute authority of Christ and scripture in all things. That would be my hope for answer here.
And that doesn't necessarily jibe with the commoditization of higher education.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that here at Masters that's something that we contend with as much maybe as anywhere else? Or,
you know, I would say that here we tend not to. There are ways in which it does impact us. We do get a lot of transfer students. We try and be transfer friendly because for the right students, we want them to be attracted to come here. And we don't want that to have massive barriers. Mm-hmm. There are things called CLEP tests that you would be familiar with as
sure.
an advisor. That's an opportunity for a student to demonstrate that they have learned in some classes, not all classes, but in some general ed classes, that they can take a CLEP test and demonstrate that maybe they have the basic level or satisfactory level of writing ability and that they can go on now. So that would be one area that we would see that at this university.
I know when we as professors advise students, and by advise, it's okay, here's what's my graduation plan. You know, that there's a lot of ways that advising crops up, but in this particular area, it does become a bit of a game. Like, can I shave a semester off here? Can I shave? When you and I were in school, you, I'm sure, remember the term the fifth year senior. That was mm-hmm. not uncommon to go mm-hmm. 5 years. Now I see students will come in with so many of their gen eds, general ed requirements met, and they're looking to be in and out in two and a half years. How does that affect the dynamic of an institution?
Absolutely. I mean, we're thankful for those students that come.
Mm-hmm.
We are able to extend our mission to those students who maybe started somewhere else. It's a reality. It's something that we have to carefully monitor. That's why it's so important that our faculty demonstrate not only the desire to get into the classroom and teach, but to really invest in mm-hmm. students' lives and to have an influence of discipleship over them. beyond just, do you have enough credits? It's, how are you investing yourself? How are you putting Christ first in your studies? How are you putting Christ first in balancing your social development, your academic development, your spiritual development, maybe your athletic development? You know, this is the 18 to 22-year-old student, which is most typical age group that we have here on campus. They're learning to grow into what we call freestanding moral agents. Mm-hmm. And that's that our student life team is looking at the importance of that concept. And so that would be the partnership that we have at the university with our faculty who are helping students do that is so critically important, because every student's journey is going to be just a little different.
I'm so glad we've landed in this place, because I know, Mitch, this is your heart. Like, you talk to the faculty collectively about this, but you and I have talked about this just one-on-one, how much you impress upon us to remember that each student is here for a purpose individually. And when they come into our offices to ask those advising questions, you are always encouraging us, hey, take a step back and say, all right, we can certainly put on paper what your academic plan is, but let's talk about some of these bigger issues. Why are you here? What is that you, why did the Lord lead you here? Where are you at spiritually? Where are you at intellectually, academically, all socially, all those things? Yeah. And those conversations with our students become the foundation for those rich relationships that we enjoy, I think makes this place special.
Absolutely.
And so, for instance, we had a record freshman class. Mm-hmm. 2 years in a row now, mm-hmm. we've had this. Talk a bit about you as a senior academic officer on this campus, the shepherding component of all these young men and women coming here, what that means for us as faculty in serving these young people.
Yeah, I mean, what a tremendous stewardship opportunity that we have, that the Lord's brought us these young people. We are, when I talk to parents at conferences and they say, oh, my son or daughter went to school there, I always thank them for entrusting their students to us. It's a tremendous responsibility. It's humbling, mm-hmm. for sure. So the more students we have, though, the more we have to focus on what makes us special, that we don't simply go down the road of efficiency and say, you know, we're going to process these students through, you know, we'll have classes of 250 students. It's fine because we just have to get through the lectures. We pride ourselves in, I think, in the best way possible when I say that, on the close relationship that we have. And I say it this way, you know, students can fail. They do from mm-hmm. time to time. But by and large, our faculty have the attitude, we're not going to let you fail. We're going to do everything that we can do to support you and help you grow. Sometimes that is a little bit of tough love,
yeah.
to say, this is, you know, you need to shape up. But it's not a black and white. Hey, you're not cutting it. You're out of my class. It's faculty have that attitude that you just talked about. Ask the question, why are you making the decisions you're making? What's going on in your life that's leading you down this road? Because I'm interested not in just passing my class.
Right.
I'm interested in you in growing into someone who is honoring to the Lord in all things. So I had a student ask me yesterday. We sat down and we were talking. They're getting ready to graduate. They're going to enter into the secular world. They have a very specific career path that they were looking at. And their question was, you know, I've spent my life in a Christian bubble. So what's it like? How do I live as a Christian in the secular world? What's that? What am I facing? What's that going to look like?
Wow.
And, you know, I immediately said, well, I can't answer that in, you know.
How much time you got?
how much time do you have? But it was a very insightful question. And I thought, what can I tell the student that would be of the most value to them? I could give them examples. I could give them scenarios. I could give them tips and tricks. And I just said to them, the most important thing that you do is you settle in your mind that Christ is the highest authority in your life. And every decision you make, every choice you make, every action you take is submitted to that
mm-hmm.
reality. You'll be fine.
I love that. We can't necessarily control how students and their families see higher education coming into master's, right? If it is a commodity, and to some degree, there is that. There's an exchange going on mm-hmm. there. But from our perspective, we as faculty, we can't commoditize it. Mm-hmm. It is not that for us. It is a mission field. It is a ministry. It is a coming alongside. And you just described it so well. I'm so glad you did. I was having a conversation with a fellow faculty member this morning, and I said, you know, the question I ask every morning driving in is, okay, I'm commanded to love these students. And not just that, I want to love these students. What's it going to look like today? What does that mean today? Mm-hmm. And for each student in each scenario, it may be different. Like you said, tough love. Sometimes love means to say, we'll see you next semester in this class. You know, I'm sorry that you've landed here, but it means a lot of other things too. And I'm really glad the way you framed that. It's why we're here. What you just said is why we're here. And I believe why the Lord has brought these young men and women here.
And how that impacts me as the Chief Academic Officer, Provost, is that what a joy and a privilege it is for me to serve faculty doing that for the next generation of Christian men and women in the world, in business, in missions, in the home, in the church, wherever they might be. That changes the nature of what I do because I am not managing a warehouse that's producing a commodity. Mm-hmm. I am privileged with the opportunity to serve people to help make your job and every other faculty member's job smooth and efficient so that you can get about the work of educating the whole person of each one of your students.
Normally, I don't try to speak for other people, but I know I can speak for the entire faculty. I would tell you that there isn't a day we don't roll in here loving what the Lord has called us to do. And a big part of that is what you just described. And we're grateful that you make this the priority, because if it weren't the priority, it would just be a job. And we don't want to be hirelings. We want to be shepherds here. And that's what makes this place, I think, so unique and so special. So it's been tremendous pleasure for me to hear you articulate these things. Full disclosure to our listeners, I knew how you would answer many of these questions because it's not a mystery. This is something that you wear your heart on your sleeve about this. And you talk about this to anyone who will listen. And that permeates the faculty and out into the classroom. And you're such a humble guy. You wouldn't take any credit for this. You'll say, look, I'm just taking the baton and moving it forward. But you are moving it forward, and we appreciate everything you do, Dr. Hopewell, in that.
It's very kind. Thank you.
And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in today. You're listening to Dr. Mitch Hopewell, and we will catch you on the next episode of The Art of Discernment.
Thank you for listening to The Art of Discernment. For more information on the Masters University, visit masters.edu. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We'll see you next time.